Welcome. This is Anima Voices on CFRO 100.5 FM, your co-op radio in Vancouver, British Columbia. My name is Tim. I'm joined here in the studio by Allison.
Hi there.
And Amir.
Thanks for having me.
And what you were listening to or hearing in the beginning was a recording from the Empty the Tanks demo last weekend at the Vancouver Aquarium. And Amir and I were both there.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty great.
I'm very sorry I didn't make it, but I was there last year, and I definitely kept on top of everything that was happening in the videos and the photos that followed.
Yeah, it was my first one, actually. And I think, Tim, you were saying that last year the turnout seemed to be a bit bigger. Going into the event, though, it seemed like it was going to be a really huge deal. Unfortunately, it wasn't as big as maybe some people thought it was going to be, but... I think the impact hopefully was still felt by the people that were there, at least.
Yeah, there were many people there. For the people who weren't there, just as a description, so there was a group of protesters in front of the aquarium at the entrance and chanting and holding up signs. But then also a group of activists kind of crashed the Beluga show, which was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
So there were some people going to the back side of the Beluga tank, and once the show started, they started chanting from there, and then people inside the aquarium unfolded a banner to bring the message across. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I saw a video of that online, and I kind of wish for more of that type of, I guess, direct action, you can call it. Because how can you see somebody bring up signs like that while you're watching the show and then not think about it as you're watching it, you know?
So. I know. When I saw that video, too, and did you notice the react? I mean, I would just expect the public, the people watching, to be like, that's it. I'm not supporting this, and storm out. But no, they just kept sitting there watching the show as the commentator kept, in her very bubbly voice, kept talking about the animals and the trucks they were doing. So that was a real juxtaposition there, and quite strange. I thought, like, that was like something out of the Twilight Zone.
Also
really
strange
weird.
I was saying to Tim earlier, like, this was one of my first big protests. I went to the Greater Vancouver Zoo one as well, but one thing I noticed is people that were coming into the aquarium, they would turn and see all the protesters and the signs, and they would immediately turn away. And I described that as willful ignorance, but they don't even want to read anything.
And then go into the aquarium.
Exactly.
You mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hear you. I saw that too at the zoo. Just people, you know.
Just turning a blind eye, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing that I would have hoped for, I mean, this was an international organized event. Empty the Tanks happened worldwide on that day. And I think maybe people weren't aware of that. Like in the local press, I read that it's the third annual protest here in Vancouver. But I feel it didn't really bring the message home that it was really a worldwide thing, and that there were like protests, literally around the world.
Do you feel that would have validated it more for the people the public? Is that what you're trying to say?
I think so, because
know... it's not just a bunch of crazy Vancouver protesters. This is happening worldwide. People are concerned worldwide
exactly.
about animals in captivity.
Exactly, and I think especially in Vancouver, we are in this difficult position that the aquarium really holds up the image of doing good work and rescue work, and many people buy into that. So when they hear Empty the Tanks, a slogan, they think like, oh, but the aquarium is doing good work. And so I think it's really touchy here in the city that people want to get rid of the cetacean in captivity in the aquarium. But if protesters attack the aquarium as a whole thing, it would be difficult for them to get support, because many people support the aquarium even if they don't support cetacean captivity.
Yeah, actually I was talking to somebody on the bus right after the protest about that, and she like I'm in the school of thought where I don't think it's educational at all, because again, you can't study animals in captivity because they don't behave the same way they would in the wild. But she still seemed to think, this woman that I was talking to on the bus, that it did have some educational merit. And she was one of the people at the protest. So obviously there's a very mixed kind of understanding from different people of different backgrounds about what it's really about.
Yeah. Yeah. So we will keep trying to bring the the message home and yeah. educating people.
And just a teaser, I actually have some breaking news about this whole topic that'll maybe change the future for Empty the Tanks.
All right, so let's I'm excited to talk about that later. So yeah, the rest of today's show, later we will have an interview with Ryan Patey from the Tofu magazine. That's pretty exciting. And today we also have a cookbook review. We haven't had one in a long time. Close Vegan Italian Kitchen. Allison, you read that book.
Not only did I read it, but I did a lot of extensive cooking from it. And wow, do I ever wish I could do more. But I'm just like up to my ears in cookbooks that I'm reviewing. And this is definitely, I would say, one of the top ones that I have acquired in a while. I mean, so for people who don't know, Chloe Coscarelli, she's the author of this new book that came out late last year, Chloe's Vegan Italian Kitchen. You might know her from her other cookbook called Chloe's Kitchen, which I actually reviewed on the show several years ago. And then since then, she's also had Chloe's Vegan Desserts. You may also know her as being the winner of the original Cupcake Wars television program with her amazing vegan cupcakes. And just a side note, she'll be opening a vegan restaurant in New York this summer, which I look forward to trying out because it's opening in July and I'll be there in August.
Oh, so awesome.
Yeah, so she's got this huge following, and like, look at her face. Like, why would I've got the cookbook in here for Tim. Why, and Amir, why wouldn't you want to make food and eat food from this lovely looking lady? Yeah. Okay. So this book is subtitled 150 Pizzas, Pastas, Pestos, Risottos, and Lots of Creamy Italian Classics. And yeah, I couldn't wait to try out this book. The thing is she is a school-trained chef. And not only that, she comes from an Italian background. Oh, and yeah. So she's grown up with Italian food as her background. So I guess it was only a matter of time and not too much time before she came out with an Italian cookbook that's vegan. There's not a lot of those out there as well. So yeah, I was just really happy to review this.
Awesome. Yeah. I have to say, I'm familiar with Chloe, but I wasn't ever that interested in her other cookbooks because I don't have a sweet tooth, so I'm not interested in cupcakes and her dessert book. But now this book looks really, really good. What particularly did you like about it?
Okay, yeah, several things. I mean, for me, a cookbook, part of the reason to enjoy a cookbook is if it's presented beautifully, and this one certainly is. If you want to take a quick look through here, like the pages and the colors, and there's so many beautiful color photographs, and that just really made... Oh, there's a picture of something that I actually made for... this spaghetti and meatballs. I made this for everyone, but I think you were out of the country.
I missed that, yeah.
Did you get a bite of these meatballs and spaghetti, which were amazing?
I think I did, actually.
Okay, but we'll get back to that. But yeah, beautiful photographs. Like, and not only that, but I really love a cookbook where there's a little story to tell before each one, right? Like, Tim, I think you appreciate that as well. Yeah. It's like she goes and she gives a little explanation and backstory behind every dish and how it relates to her and her family life, or how she's made it different by being vegan, or how it's just like there's some dishes like this lemonade cauliflower. It's just like simple. It's roasted cauliflower, and it's just the beauty in it. It's just like, it's just vegetables, you know.
Is it actually roasted with lemonade?
No, I made it. It's just a zest of one lemon.
Oh,
so it
okay.
becomes lemonade cauliflower. But I love roasted cauliflower, and it was such a simple recipe. So that was one of the ones that I made. Just,
nice.
You know, cauliflower. And like, some of the recipes are pretty basic. There was another one that was a roasted balsamic zucchini and just strips of zucchini. That was when I sliced my finger off, by the way, on my mandolin.
No.
And it did grow back. I don't even remember what finger it was. But apart from that little bit of a bloody mess, it was a really delicious dish, and just like some balsamic vinegar and olive oil drizzled over it. And I mean, you know, Tim, and maybe you too, Amir, just like what the tastes and flavors you can get just out of roasting vegetables, mm-hmm. because vegetables are food too, right?
Of course.
But not only that, what else do you think of when you think of Italian food?
I guess cheese would obviously come up to mind, yeah.
Exactly, cheese, yeah. She says she's a fan of anything that's doughy, creamy, and cheesy.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of that in here. I'm not so much with the doughy and the cheesy, but there's a lot of pizza recipes. There's a lot of pasta recipes. I'm not a big pasta fan, which is why I made the spaghetti and meatballs for you guys so you could try them out. But those meatballs were so good that it was called Mama's Spaghetti and Meatballs. They were made out of cremini mush. Is that how you say it? Cremini or cremini mushroom?
Cremini.
Yeah, I don't even know because I don't cook mushrooms. I hate mushrooms. But I opted to, sometimes I'll make something with mushrooms if I see it's like chopped really fine and ground in and you can't taste it. So cremini.
Yeah. You can say button mushrooms.
But yeah, and they were, I know, when I was at the store, I was like, are these them? Mm. They're button mushrooms. I think they're the same thing. And they were, yeah, and herbs and breadcrumbs and brown rice and squish it all together. You get these lovely meatless meatballs. They are so good.
And it's so much better than like the store-bought like Gardein kind of stuff. I really prefer when people make their own like meatballs or sausages and stuff like that, because a lot of the ones you buy in the stores have all these fillers and like chemicals in them sometimes.
Or soy.
Yeah, soy.
One thing that always kind of makes or breaks a cookbook for me is how well are the techniques explained in this book? Like, does it give just recipes, or does it really explain... Why does she explain why she does what she,
what
does,
she
and,
does
and how she does it, or maybe variations of how you could do it if you don't find the ingredients or if you just want to try something else?
Yeah, well, first of all, for ingredients wise, I find like they're all pretty standard ingredients, so nothing that's too difficult to find, just kind of like normal food and classic Italian dishes that have been veganized. Hey, look, there's a little example for you. I just flipped on this. Chloe's tip, how to segment a grapefruit.
Oh, yeah.
So,
And
I don't eat grapefruit, so I'd totally skip that page. I do really appreciate books that do show some background like that. So at the back, you're going to find a glossary of terms. And I like it when they have a glossary of like all the different kinds of foods that you might not have. The Vegan Italian Pantry, it's called all kinds. So it explains nuts and olive oil and coconut oil and semolina flour. And there's the mushrooms. There was even a little chapter for mushrooms, tempeh, all the different kinds of non-dairy milk. So she's giving explanations of how these are all used and what they are. And then she also has a little section right after of just the standard equipment that you'll need to make the food from this. And it's all normal stuff. Yeah, all normal equipment. So yeah, I'd say definitely that's the win in that area. It's not just recipes. It's more than that. It's beautiful. Look at this book. It's beautiful.
Okay, so obviously you love this book.
I do.
Just to wrap it up, who would you recommend it to? Is it more aimed at beginners or experienced cooks or for everybody? Or?
Yeah, I think Chloe's, her audience is definitely the general mainstream, and this book is no different. Her first book, Chloe's Kitchen, just grabbed everyone. There are so many reviews online of just people who are just normal people who just loved the recipes. And one thing about this book, too, I have to say, is like they all work out. Like all the recipes I tried out 9, they just all work out. And
That's
don't you great. Just love that? So the average person can just dive into this book, make their favorite pastas and pizzas, but with a twist, right? It's not just boring stuff. Like it's really really just amazing. Like she's got like a simple like spicy tomato soup, but she does it her way. I love her tomato soups, and just the way that she makes stuff, it's extra. It's not boring. It's got extra flavor and extra little bit of extra techniques and maybe a little bit of different ingredients that you haven't used before. So I would definitely recommend this just to the avid average cook, someone who wants to try something new, someone who just loves food, especially Italian food.
No, that sounds great.
Hot Squad Tanoyap, Monica Queen Snaw. Hello, my name is Monica. We're from Norgate Community School.
Hot Squad Tanoyap, Norman Queen Snaw. Tina Chitla Homolchiston Skolautu.
Chapwa Tukwaya An, Ta, Vancouver Co op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. Online at www.cooperadio.org.
So you are listening to 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Co-op Radio, playing from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And now we have some news headlines for you. So as I was alluding to earlier, there's some breaking news that actually just happened yesterday for that affects cetaceans in captivity. And this is really big. So yesterday in Ottawa, Senator Wilfrid Moore presented a proposal to the Senate for a bill to ban the captivity of whales and dolphins in Canada. So like I said, this is huge news, and it could largely affect the businesses of the aquarium here in Vancouver and Marineland in Ontario, which are the only two remaining facilities in Canada that hold cetaceans in captivity. But much more so, it would certainly affect the poor animals that are being held in these facilities. Mm-hmm. This bill is called the Ending the Captivity of Whales and Dolphins Act, and will prohibit breeding, imports, exports, and live captures of whales, dolphins, and porpoises across Canada. Can you believe that? Like, this is huge. As I was saying before, yeah. Like, maybe we won't need an empty the tanks demo anymore worldwide, or at least in Canada, if this is the case. So like I said, this just broke in the news yesterday, and I watched the video of Senator Moore reading his proposal out, which is all very well thought out. And, you know, he was reading, basically giving the basic facts about why these animals shouldn't be held in captivity, which we all know about. But here's just a little quote of what he wrote, which just makes me feel happy. Like, this is just a regular guy, I guess, who has some common sense. He says, keeping them in captivity requires holding them in conditions that are socially isolating, stressful, and physically restrictive. And he also invited anyone who disagrees with this proposal to view the documentary film Blackfish, which clearly shows the conditions that these mammals are kept in while held at these aquarium facilities. And I would have to say I agree with him. Like, if there's anyone who disagrees, anyone who thinks that the aquarium is needed, like, you need to see animals jumping and doing tricks in order to learn about them and in order to educate, in order to rescue them, then watch Blackfish before you speak any further, because most certainly you haven't. And former SeaWorld and Marine Land trainers have also supported this bill. So what do you guys think?
Do you know what prompted this initially? Like,
no, I don't. This was just like a news story that just jumped out of
it. Happened
nowhere.
Right after the empty the tanks too,
happened,
which I was
yesterday,
like,
afternoon. Yeah, it was morning time, our time, and in Ottawa, it was like, they even said the time was like 12:42 p.m. or something. So there's not a lot of news about this.
No,
I don't have any further information about how this bill will proceed, which obviously we'll be following that, right? Because, you know, these things take time, and I'd like to see how far this can be taken, and hopefully it's not just slammed down right away. And I really hope, I think this is the time, as he said, everyone who has a voice in this proposal as to whether it passes or not, they need to watch Blackfish first and educate themselves, and then how can they not support it, right?
It's just really cool to see that being introduced, that idea being introduced into the government. Something else that's come up recently, not as important maybe, but Ben and Jerry's has announced that they're going to be launching a vegan flavor of ice cream, so dairy-free ice cream.
That's also breaking news. I just read that.
Yeah, obviously it's buzzing all across the social media where vegans are involved, at least. And I just wanted to say, I think it's kind of silly maybe how excited people are about this. I mean, it's a company that's been pushing dairy products for over the last 10 years. I don't know how long Ben & Jerry's has been around for.
10 years?
Probably way more than that, actually.
Yeah.
But in 2003, they launched something called the Caring Dairy Program. Apparently, it's some sort of program where farmers can self-evaluate the conditions on their farms and stuff, which seems kind of contradictory. Like, why would farmers be self-evaluating and then that being a sign of how good they are? You can call yourself anything you want, basically. There's no third party.
And that happens already.
Yeah.
Yeah, if they do it or not.
And you were saying that they're not even launching this thing till next year anyways.
We all have to wait until 2016 to get this one vegan flavor from Ben & Jerry's. And as I was saying before, by then, there'll probably be five other new companies of non-dairy ice creams who have each launched 20 flavors each.
Who don't actually have that many dairy products either. Ben & Jerry's obviously is still going to be primarily a dairy-fueled company.
They're still running really behind. Like, obviously, they're trying to catch up with this this huge trend of non-dairy ice creams, which is great, I think. Like, more non-dairy ice cream, the better.
Yeah.
Even though I make my own, I don't buy it, but I'm all supportive for it.
Yeah.
By the time this one measly flavor is released, which they won't even give a hint as to what it might be, that's a secret right now.
Yeah.
We're going to wait for a year. No, by then.
It's creating more buzz.
Yeah, it's going to sort of not be an issue, I think. But hey.
Okay, now for our interview of today's show. Earlier this week, I spoke with Ryan Patey from the Tofu magazine. Tofu magazine, if you don't know, is a digital vegan magazine. It has been published since 2007. it's really interesting. It started off out as a general interest vegan magazine and took on more and more deeper and political issues. And Ryan is on a tour right now called the Wild Tofu Tour across North America. And the Wild Tofu Tour hopes to bring an evening of music and conversation to each city while promoting the vegan magazine Tofu. More than a concert, each event will also aim to showcase local organizations that fight against a number of forms of oppression to encourage those who in attendance to get involved in their community on a local and global level. So that alone was reason enough for me to call Ryan up. I reached him earlier this week in Portland, Oregon, where he is right now. I caught him just after he got home from a long day, and I think he was kind of making food in the background, so you might hear some noises. But give it a go.
What is tofu, and how did you get to start it?
Well, I guess tofu is... right now, it's a digital vegan magazine. It started in 2007 based off of the success of... we did two small like vegan cookbooks, just pretty much sold them within Halifax. The first one was set up as a fundraiser for a outdoor show that I was doing because I was pretty heavily involved in the music scene back then. So we just needed to raise money because I was doing this free all-ages outdoor show, and... a couple of the people that I was working with were vegans, and including my partner at the time. I wasn't at that point, so I just felt like it might be, you know, an interesting thing because a lot of musicians typically end up gravitating towards that sort of thing as well. So we did those. They were really well received. Sold them at like a couple different places within the city. Then my partner did a vegan dining guide to Halifax. And then when we were just kind of talking about, you know, what we wanted the next project to be, for some reason we felt that a magazine would be a sensible thing to do. And yeah, it just kind of went from there. Like, I mean, basically it just started, we kind of wanted to showcase just vegans from all over the place and kind of show that idea that they weren't just like a kind of stereotype that you could put in a little box and say, oh yeah, this is what a vegan looks like and what they sound like and what they do in their life and everything else. So the first few issues were pretty much just an open call to anyone who wanted to write about, you know, veganism, being vegan, or even just other things. Like, because then by putting that out there, people could realize, you know, okay, there are vegans all around the world, and maybe some of them are like, you know, stay-at-home moms of three, maybe others are in, like, hardcore punk bands, and just to kind of give that, like, the depth of what the vegan community was. The past few issues have actually been more critically focused on, say, like, one of the more popular ones was involving, like, the issue of body image and fat phobia and shaming right. people, even within the vegan community, and maybe especially in the vegan community, that would say, you know, oh, I'm vegan, and then someone would go, well, you're a terrible representation of veganism because you're not thin and quote-unquote beautiful and whatever. And so, yeah, the last, I guess, four or five issues have been more kind of trying to interrelate other forms of oppression with veganism and maybe kind of say, like, look, veganism is not the be-all, end-all. Like, once right. Once you get rid of the animal products and everything, that doesn't mean that you're like, cool, I'm done, I'm perfect. Because vegans can be jerks. And, you know, so it's just trying to get people to think about that stuff and to realize that there are definitely more things. Like I said to you, right? Like, there's more things you can get involved with on any given day. And if you're into it, you're going to end up, you know, one thing's going to blur into another. And it doesn't all have to just be around, you know, animals, especially... you know, especially if you're considering animals just like the furry four-legged ones, right? Like, you know, people are animals, and if you kind of open that far, then all of a sudden you got a lot more things to deal with. And so, yeah, I mean, I've had pretty good success with that. A lot of people seem to be open to it, and, you know, I've got some flack from some people who feel like, you know, you shouldn't be critical of that, like we should all be helping each other and everything, but I kind of feel like ideally it is going to help the movement if you know, if we're open to accepting that there are some flaws and some things that need to be talked about and dealt with critically. So Yeah, I guess, you know, the magazines had an evolution, but it started with a couple little crappy cookbooks that I sort of shudder at looking at them now. Since I went digital, I've been able to do the Tofu Grant, which basically I just take half of the advertising income for each issue, and then I just give it to someone who I feel, you know, maybe needs a little financial push. Like, say, Breeze Harper, I think it was issue 5, we did a big spotlight on her work. And so, you know, when it came time to figure out who should get the grant for that one, you know, I got in contact with her and said, hey, I'd like to give you some money because you're awesome. And, you know, she was more than happy to accept it. And yeah, and I think, you know, it's like, it's just been good to be able to do that sort of thing. And I think maybe that kind of helps too, because I've sort of, like, I've highlighted people who maybe aren't necessarily totally pushing the, like, specific vegan line of things, but they are, like, within that sort of maybe a little left of the center of it. So just doing that, I think it's also kind of, you know, just connecting some bridges. And, I mean, also, like, addressing issues, like, say, the last one was sexism and veganism, and sort of how, you know, like, our campaigns shouldn't rely on, you know, sexist advertising, which quote unquote sells, but kind of sells out the movement and offends a lot of other people who are doing some really great work in other areas. So I kind of feel like maybe by addressing those things, maybe the magazine has kind of had people open up a little more to veganism instead of having them, you know, instead of having them told, like, oh, well, it's for the animals, so just kind of stop being so negative and sensitive. And it's like, that's the same thing that they're hearing from a bunch of other groups. So why not be allies with them and say, hey, you know what? Actually, we totally, you know, want to hear what you're saying, and maybe you can listen to what we're saying.
You mentioned already earlier that there has been a bit of an evolution in the magazine. And I noticed that also when I was looking at, you know, your past issues, that it's kind of like started out as a general interest vegan magazine. And it turned more and more to social and generally political issues and hot topics also in the vegan community. And I find that is really, really important. I think there's really a need for that there, that it's not just, I mean, there aren't many other vegan publications out there, but usually it's just like a celebration of the latest, like, vegan cheese that's out there, if you know what I mean. Like, you know, it's, yeah, like, now you can buy this other product.
Yeah, or whether or not Beyonce's decided to be vegan this month. That's usually
exactly
celebrate. Yeah, I mean, I guess I kind of feel like over the past couple years, I think I've sort of started to, like, carve out that niche in a way. And people, I mean, I guess it's been twofold. I've kind of been, like, pushing some people away, maybe not necessarily pushing them away, but just kind of saying, like, look, this is the line that I'm drawing in the sand, and I have no problem with criticizing veganism as a movement. I have no problem with criticizing some of the organizations that are involved, and I feel that these issues are just as important as, you know, not eating animals. I think I could say most of the thanks or whatever goes to a past partner of mine who worked with me on a few of the issues. And she kind of just brought it to my attention that there were all these things that needed to be talked about. Like, it wasn't just, you know, veganism as a lifestyle. There was a lot more to think about. And so I, you know, eventually I sort of opened up to that idea. I mean, there was definitely hesitation on my end. Like, I feel, you know, when you kind of address anyone and say, listen, you need to open your world more and fix things that you're doing wrong and everything, I think everyone kind of hesitates. So yeah, I mean, it's been an evolution, and I think it's gonna continue. I mean, anything that we have touched on, like, you know, sexism and racism and body image and everything, I kind of feel like we could have done 20 or 30 issues on that. Like, it's, you know, it's a never-ending thing that just kind of needs to be constantly dealt with.
Right.
But I'm just sort of hoping that by putting those out there and having them available at any point, whenever someone comes in to, you know, say the newest issue, then they will be able to go back and look at these And then most of the people that write about it, like in the case of the main issues, I usually approach those people because I know they've been talking about things and they've been fairly vocal about that main issue. So I usually approach them and say, hey, look, I want you to do a focus piece that's going to be like 2 to 5 pages and actually have some depth to it, because I know this is something you can talk about. So ideally, when people come across that issue and they go, yeah, this person, like, this is really how I feel, then they can actually follow through with that person and find them online. And I mean, most of these writers have blogs, and they have, you know, some of them might have cookbooks out, or they've got books out on their own. So it kind of goes back to that whole idea of just giving someone a spotlight or like a soapbox to stand on and saying, hey, you know what? Maybe this is someone you wouldn't have heard about, but somehow you heard about the magazine. So go a little further down the rabbit hole and you'll find out even more info. But for now, here's, you know, maybe 20 pages dedicated to this with a few recipes and a couple other articles.
How do you go about to picking the topics for the next issue, and are you afraid that you might ever run out of topics to focus on?
I've definitely been thinking about whether or not I'm going to run out, especially now where I'm sort of dedicating myself to putting out more regular issues. I've got a list now. It probably goes up to like issue 13 or 14 of the possible topics. After that, it's, I don't know. So whether or not it'll go to issue 15, I'm not sure. Maybe I'll just go back to interviewing celebrities. But yeah, for right now, it's more, it all just kind of happens organically. Like I've got friends that maybe they've started struggling with, you know, veganism and their health. And so that sort of just sparked me to go, you know what, like that's something that needs to be talked about. And I attended the Vita Vegan conference in Austin a couple weeks ago, and there was a panel, well, a talk where someone was talking about, you know, body image and eating disorders and food blogging and how it all kind of, you know, helps each other, or it can also kind of like just not be a good, you know, a good force. So I approached that person and I said, look, like this is something that I want to be a focus of a future issue. So let's keep in touch. And yeah, it's always just kind of been that way. Like, you know, I'd end up finding someone that I think is doing great work. And then it's like, okay, well, maybe we should get other people to talk about this.
So what will be the topic of the future? Like issue 9 is coming out, and when is it coming out?
Yep. Issue 9 is like literally, we're at probably 85%, maybe 90% done right now. It's going to be focused on age, though, which I think is another thing that people aren't necessarily like conscious of. I mean, a lot of the marketing and everything targets, say, like, you know, 20 to 35 year olds, and everyone's like young and full of energy and everything else, and a lot of the stuff you see, and say like a lot of the time the protests and stuff might not take into account, say, you know, really young kids or, you know, seniors that might have mobility issues and that sort of stuff. So I've got a bunch of articles just from people who, you know, maybe turned vegan when they were like 40 or 50, and how that's changed their lives and how they felt they either were able to connect with the overall vegan community or how they kind of felt alienated by it. And then I also ended up with some people willing to contribute, like from the point of view of their kids. So like 4-year-olds and 7-year-olds, and how being vegan in school has been for them and how they feel about it.
Let's just quickly talk about the tour. You're on a tour right now, Wild Tofu. What inspired you to do that, and what does it entail?
Ideally, each stop has been a couple local bands and some local organizations at the table. So say, like you mentioned, with the one in Vancouver, which will be like the big finale, I guess, it's going to be at Heartwood Community Cafe, which a lot of people recommended to me just for their sort of community and political values and everything. There's a couple of local musicians playing, Yeah, and like that's the kind of thing that I've been trying to do, right? Is ideally they're all ages and they're, you know, accessible for people with disabilities, and sliding scale for the admission fee, so it's like $5 or less. You know, I'm not going to turn anyone away at the door. And yeah, so we've done a bunch of those shows, and it's been great. I mean, you know, just getting to know what some people are doing on the local level has been interesting, and people that have come out to the shows have been able to find out, so that when I leave town, it's not just, oh, okay, well, that was cool. Like, ideally, people can actually leave with something that they connect with in their town. Yeah, I mean, I'm basically just taking a page out of most punk bands that, you know, like Propagandhi, I went to see them, and that's what they had, was a couple people tabling. They had a local group get up on stage and talk before the band played, and so just that idea of getting info out there and, you know, showing or kind of introducing people to new things outside of just veganism and animal rights, but obviously they all kind of interrelate with each other.
Which musicians are playing here in Vancouver when you're going to be here?
Yeah, let me see. I brought up the list there. I'm not 100% sure if I'm saying his name right, but Esteia Elements, he's a local hip-hop guy who actually did the last show that I did in Vancouver. So he's going to be playing, and then his buddy Ian FM and DJ Organic and I think Wateroo, which I might be mispronouncing as well. So it's going to be different than most of the other shows. The other shows have been more acoustic. So this one will be a little more along the lines of like the hip hop sort of thing, some beatboxing and, you know, some vinyl spinning and everything. But I think they're all going to kind of just play off each other. So it'll be like a couple hours of just, you know, some pretty solid music. And there'll be, I believe, yeah, like you said, like Animal Voices will be there tabling and a few other organizations, and there'll be some vegan food, and hopefully it'll be a good time. I think it will.
Awesome. Yeah, that sounds really great. So that is on Saturday the 20th, right? Oh. I have that correct.
Yep.
Yeah. At Hardwood Community Cafe.
Yeah, and the doors are at 8.
That was Ryan Patey, editor and publisher of Tofu Magazine, who is currently on a tour across North America with final destination Vancouver, BC, where he'll be hosting a show at Hardwood Community Cafe on June 20th. You're listening to Animal Voices on CFRO 100.5 FM, your Vancouver Co-op radio. And now for a song, Tofulicious, by German hip-hop artist Shaban and Captain Peng.
Der Grund, warum alles aus dem Steakhouse rausrennt. Ganze Familien feiern schmatzend und schmausend. Tofu als ein Hit für den Ernährer, der sich auskennt. Denn Tofu ist Deluxe und ist spezial. Das Phantom unter den Speisen, denn geschmacksneutral. Tofu schmeckt wie Fleisch, Tofu schmeckt wie Eiscreme. Alles, was dir schmeckt, kannst du in diese Masse reindrehen. Kräuter der Provence, Kräuter aus dem Garten. Schnipp, schnibbel, die dippst du in deinen Tofu-Braten. Pack es in die Suppe und tu es dir aufs Brot. Wegen Tofu sehen alle Karnivoren rot. Sie schreien und sie weinen und sie fordern ein Verbot, wollen weiter Scheiße fressen, doch Veränderung tut Not. Uns bleiben noch 5 Jahre, danach sticken wir im Kot. Von Rindern, Weine, Hühner, Schafe, Ziegen, Mastgetier und Scheißhaus fliegen, Fleischer, Schlachter, Geier, Ratten fangen schon ein einzupacken. Denn sie raffen, nicht zu machen, Tofu ist nicht abzuschaffen, nicht zu platten, nicht zu killen. Tofu hat den eisernen Willen, denn Tofu ist der Ninja unter den Speisen. Unbemerkt verkleidet er sich auf 1000 Art und Weisen. Als Steak, als Huhn, als Fisch, als Wurst. Selbst Sojamilch löscht dir deinen Tofu durch. Denn das ist die Basis, es geht nicht ohne. Der wahre Tofisch verehrte die Sojabohne. Der springende Punkti ist die heilige Mutter. Singt ihren Namen, denn sie gibt uns Futter. T-O-F-U heißt die Substanz, mit der mein Geschmacksnerv Polka tanzt. Es ist super lecker, es ist ganz, ganz toll. Vater, Mutter, Kind hauen sich die Wampe voll mit super Tofu. Alter, das ist lecker wie nichts. Ich sag dir, Tofu ist der Name meines Hauptgerichts. Den lieben langen Tag, manche nennen es manisch. Als Tofu einmal weg wird, mein Hirn panisch. Ich habe Möbel aus Tofu, ich mach Skulpturen aus Tofu. Manchmal bade ich in Tofu und manchmal rede ich mit Tofu. Ich trage Kleidung aus Tofu und lese Zeitung aus Tofu. Meine Kinder heißen beide Tofino und Tofu. Ups, geht das nicht einen Schritt zu weit? Ich sage nö, Tofu ist nicht nur ein Zeitvertreib. Ich sage Tofu an die Macht, ich sage Tofu for President. Verbreite die Scheiße bis hier, Tofu jeder Fleischer kenn ich. Reite in die Küche, werf das Zeug auf den Tisch. Heute gibt es Tofu anstatt Fleisch oder Fisch. Schreib es auf den Zettel und kopier es dir ins Hirn. Tofu steht in Blockschrift, tätowiert auf meiner Stirn. Aha, yeah. Tofu Mafia.
So that definitely sounds like an interesting event. We are going to be there and tabling, and hopefully many of you too. One thing that came up in the interview was that Ryan mentioned when he started the Tofu magazine, he himself actually wasn't vegan. I thought it was really interesting, and it resonated with me because when I started with Animal Voices, I also wasn't vegan. And yeah, I thought it might be interesting for our listeners to actually get to know us a bit better and to hear about our background, and especially Allison. I'm curious.
Especially me.
Well, you have been doing this show now for so long. How long have you been doing Animal Voices now?
Since November 2009. Wow. So that's coming up, six years?
Yeah.
It's not that long, but
That's impressive.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was my 21st vegetarianversary this year. So that's more impressive, I think.
That's
but
good.
Veganiversary, I don't know how many years, like nine years? Wow. That's impressive.
That is
I hadn't realized that.
So what made you do the switch, like from vegetarian to vegan?
Yeah, because vegetarian is a no-brainer, right? Just like, I don't want to kill animals because I don't believe in that. And that was before, you know, veganism was even a thing, right?
Yeah.
Let alone, like, vegetarianism was definitely a thing, I guess. It was more of like, I don't want to eat animals. And I hear a lot of people, especially when they're younger, like, they know that that's just what they want to do. And mm-hmm. whether it has a label or not, they don't know about it. So, yeah, I didn't know about veganism. All those years, I was merely a lacto-ovo-vegetarian from age 17 on. I didn't know about veganism, really, until I actually started working as the office manager of Earth Save Canada back in 2003-ish. So, yeah, and that's when my transition started, because we just had so much information there in education.
Yeah.
And that organization, the mandate is to promote plant-based diets, that is vegan diets, and transitioning to a vegan diet. And, hey, that's what I did. their mandate worked on me. So, I mean, it was my mandate too at the time, right? Because I was the face of, or one of the faces of that organization.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, it does become a no-brainer as well when you learn the issues, because I think the issues aren't so transparent. People don't realize the cruelty behind your cheese and
mm-hmm.
your cow's milk, and people don't even think that it might not be natural to suck on a cow's teat, right? Like, that's not a natural thing. People might not realize it's not natural for these cows to produce so much milk, and that they have to give birth to babies over and over again who are torn away from them at birth to do that. People don't realize that in order for the egg industry to exist, that every that all those hens that are laying the eggs, for every one hen, there's one male chick that is being ground up alive or suffocated to death. Like, that's just not kind of information that's out there and that we don't realize. And you might think that there's no suffering in dairy and eggs because the animals don't die, but there's just so much more to it than that. So it's just really a matter of education, right? And the stuff wasn't even that much on the internet back then.
It's true.
Things have changed so much since then with the rise of the internet and media.
And is that the lack of information also what inspired you to become an activist yourself, to educate more people? Or what is do you know what's the background behind that?
I think what comes behind that, because when I was merely a lacto-ovo-vegetarian, I wouldn't really have considered myself to be like an activist for the animals so much back then. I'm just trying to remember. I mean, I remember I've been in Vancouver now for 22 years, and I remember back in my early days of being here, I would participate in protests, and Liberation BC was in existence since the late 1990s, and Vancouver Humane Society, and I'd do tabling with them and go to their demos and stuff, and I guess that's sort of where it started. So, but lack of your question is because there's lack of information. I mean, I guess that's sort of the reason to be an activist all around, right? Is because it's needed. If the information, well, even the information is there now, but people, it's a matter of conveying the information. So you need to be, there needs to be conduits, right? And that's what I am, right? So like you need some kind of a person or a vessel of some sort to deliver the information to the people. And that's what I do here every week at Animal Voices, right? Mm-hmm. That's what we're here for. But of course, I've only been here for 6 years. So yeah, starting before that, my activism largely is like, a matter of figuring out like how can I be an effective activist and how can I spread the message. And now we have the internet, we've got this radio station and this wonderful radio show.
Did you also notice a change in awareness of issues that weren't animal related at all as soon as you went vegan or started?
I don't think as soon as I went vegan, because I think I'm still on that path. I would say it's more in the last several years, really.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'd say largely a lot of that is being part of this show.
Totally. Yeah. You learn a lot here.
Yeah. Like we do a lot of, we speak a lot and do a lot of research on intersectional issues. Mm-hmm. And yeah, for sure. But for sure, I mean, when you go vegan, that kind of just opens the door to all the other different social issues that are out there, because everything is interrelated. And yeah, that brings me to a heated discussion I had online this week with a woman who basically decided she hated me because I was asking her questions about surrogacy, just like totally ignorant, like why do people do this, right? She's the face of Surrogacy Canada, I think it's called. And then we got more into deeper issues, and I said, well, I don't know if I'd want to support people, like the world is already overpopulated, right? So why do we need to have like bring out more children in the world? And she said, oh, that's only in third world countries. Like, are you kidding me? And then so I gave her my ending spiel and said, I need to go now, but I just hope that you're open to other people's opinions. And she said, well, since you feel that way, I hope that you never have kids. So I'm like, geez, thanks. So yeah, definitely, I think definitely that there's all issues, all social issues intersect. Like we're all part of this world. We're all part of this earth. And you can't ignore other issues. You can't say that's only them down there in the third world countries. Like that is so ignorant. But, people will be ignorant if they don't know. So that's what we're here for at Animal Voices, is to educate people. And that's what I feel my calling is as a human on this earth, is to use whatever knowledge I have to convey it in hopefully an open and accessible way.
Yeah, it's pretty inspiring.
So, as we have mentioned, really all issues are important and they're all connected. And so I want to draw attention to some events that are happening in Vancouver. And the one that caught me, my attention the most, is actually not animal rights related. But in a way it is, because it's about climate change. It's actually tonight at Heartwood Community Cafe again, really wonderful venue. Dr. Guy McPherson on responding to abrupt climate change. He's a professor emeritus of the University of Arizona, and he has made studies and literature on sustainability. He himself lives in an off-grid cob house, and he will speak on the topic of abrupt catastrophic climate change, his proposed response to the data, and his personal journey from scientist to teacher to author to counterculture activist. And a friend of mine who helps organize this event said, "The science and research presented will be rather dire. However, if you can see through the doom, Dr. McPherson's overarching message of love is actually intensely liberating." So that's tonight at Heartwood Community Cafe, doors at 7.
Should I go next? Okay, so we've been speaking a little bit. One of the running themes of this show is Empty the Tanks and Animals in Captivity. And going off the Empty the Tanks protest from last weekend, there will be another protest at the Vancouver Aquarium Gala, it is. And I remember this happened last year, too. So this is happening on Thursday, June the 18th, starting at 5:15 p.m. at the Vancouver Aquarium. And at this time, the aquarium will be hosting its annual gala fundraiser called Night at the Aquarium. Last year, they raised $400,000 at this event, which features their live belugas and dolphins as backdrops at the $300 a plate dinner. So do we support this fundraiser? No, we don't. So let's keep the energy of Empty the Tanks going from last week and let the elite supporters of the Vancouver Aquarium know that captivity's time is coming to an end, as you'll remember from the breaking news story I had to share today, right? Aren't they going to feel silly when they realize that they're donating all this money to something that isn't going to exist soon?
Yeah.
So, yeah, so if you're going to go to this event, the protest part, not the gala, you're asked to arrive at 5:15 for the special VIP reception, but you can be there for 6:30 p.m. as well when the doors open. And if you want to find out more, you can look for Protest the Aquarium Gala on Facebook.
And something that kind of connects with what you were talking about earlier, Tim, tomorrow is the World Naked Bike Ride Day.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird way to support environmentalism, but
how does that support animal rights?
Yeah, I guess not really.
Well,
it does. It's all interconnected. We're finding a common thread here.
But it's their Facebook page, which basically says it's time to put a stop to the indecent exposure of people and the planet to cars and the pollution they create. They're meeting at Sunset Beach near the corner of Beach Avenue and Butte Street at 12, and it's rain or shine. If you're a little afraid of burying it all, though, there will be some body painting and performances with the ride itself starting at 2 p.m., and then a picnic will follow. I don't know if it's going to be vegan. Probably not. But if you want to go for naked bike riding, then that's the place to be tomorrow. And I guess also Car Free Day is coming up next week, which is kind of related, but that should be focused more on the environmental aspect, I guess, than being nude. Yeah, those are the events. And I guess that brings us to the end of our show today. We want to thank you so much for joining us today on Animal Voices. You've been listening to Animal Voices on Co-op Radio 100.5 FM on unceded Coast Salish territories. If you wanted to connect with us at all about today's show, if you have any feedback or anything like that, or if you just want to chat about animal rights, you can connect with us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. You can connect with us on Facebook at Animal Voices Vancouver, or you can even send us an email directly at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And seriously, we'd love to talk to you guys. And we're always looking to grow our community of activists and animal lovers. Join us next week for our Father's Day show. I will be hosting and hoping to bring on friend and activist David Isbister to talk about all things manly. We will be dissecting patriarchy and the challenges, but also the privileges that men have in the animal rights movement. Today we will be closing the show with a song called Life Universe by Detective Biron. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Have a fantabulous weekend, and remember always to be kind to the animals.